Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Welcome back in. Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, presented by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, intern Will here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Scheduled to be joined shortly by Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee. So looking forward to that coming up. Got a big game against Georgia coming up to begin SEC play this weekend here in Nashville. So we'll be joined by Clark Lee here in just a few minutes. A game where the opportunities were there for Vanderbilt on Saturday against Stanford. Started the game off pretty well offensively. Some mistakes to close out the half. Some bad defense in the first quarter. And Stanford just ended up being too much at the end of the day. But I think still some positives, especially offensively, for Vanderbilt in that game, at least to start with. And then a tough injury.
Yeah, right. So that's now Raymond Davis, of course, hurt and lost to the year. That's tough. He looked really good.
He did.
In that game.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee. Clark, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
I'm doing great. How are y'all doing?
Doing great. Good. Appreciate you taking time to join us. And we were just kind of talking about the Stanford game over the weekend. Clark, from your vantage point, how did you see that one shake out, and particularly – I guess what changed from the first half to the second half in terms of the counter punches that you guys were able to throw offensively, do you think?
You know, just like in the moment, I don't know that I had a great grip on the difference. I think, in review of the film, it was a couple of the plays, the runs that popped in the first half, we were one block away from springing in the second half, and being one block away is a recipe for a loss, you know. So we have to find a way to get the guys covered up, and I thought we got good push up front. I thought we did a good job of separating the defensive line from the linebackers for Stanford and making some of the fits challenging for them. But if we can't maintain blocks at the point of attack, you know, we can't spring the big runs. You know, we had a drive that got into the red zone there in the third quarter that we end up self-sabotaging with a false start on a motion, and you know, those are the things that can't show up for us, you know. And to me, Saturday was about you know, at times we had solid performance in all three phases, and then at times we had breakdowns and we never quite were able to sync up. And so you know, if we can't play complementary football, you know, we're gonna struggle to put away good teams. And so, you know, that's got to be the focus this week, is how can all three phases support each other and hopefully hit a rhythm at the same time, which is what happened against Colorado State, right? We started slow against Colorado State, but kind of offense, defense, special teams woke up at the same time, and that gave us the chance to separate in that game, and then we were able to finish it in a tight game late. You know, that needs to be our formula. And against a good team like Stanford, if you know, you have the breakdowns that we had at the end of the first half, it's just, you know, you're gonna put yourself in a tough spot, and we weren't able to climb out of it.
Clark, obviously a really tough injury. And Davis was running so well. I know Rocco Griffin also did, but first of all, just how difficult is that when you've got a guy who, you know, comes in, has kind of a fresh start. A lot of excitement about him, and you're seeing it sort of materialize in that game, and then, you know, all of a sudden it's like a snap of a finger and his season is done. And then also, how will you guys adjust there?
Well, it's a position where we, you know, we were already a little thin, so, you know, it hurts. And obviously we hurt for Ray, because we know how talented he is and how special he is, not just as a player but as a person in this program. And so we're anxious to get him healed up, but keep him around in a role where he can still support and help the other running backs and the offense. You know, I think the truth is, honestly, is I think Ray was still kind of getting his rhythm in this season. You know, so he had some good, tough runs. There were a number of runs where he was just, you know, maybe one move away from breaking a long one throughout the course of the season, and we know he's capable of that. So I'm excited for him to get his health and to get back, you know, recharged and ready to run for us a year from now. But, you know, Rocco will step up. We have full faith and confidence in Rocco. You know, Patrick Smith's a guy that we are really excited about as a true freshman. We think he has explosive athleticism and twitch, and is a guy that's exciting when he has the ball in his hand. And then Jay Sigler's a guy too that we feel like has come along. We moved him to running back in the right before fall camp, and he's flourished there. And so you know, we'll put our best foot forward. Obviously, we'll miss Ray. We'll be happy to have him with us in support. You know, we got full confidence in those other guys that carry the load.
Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Clark, you were on with Darren and Willie yesterday, and I thought you brought up something really interesting, talking about not controlling every aspect of the outcome, but seizing the opportunities in the game to grab a hold of momentum. As a coach, I guess, what does the process kind of look like of teaching that to your team, and how have you seen your team kind of respond to what you and your staff have tried to teach them on that regard?
It's a learning process. So by that I mean, you know, I think, you know, you approach it and it penetrates part of the way, and you continue to come back to it and just, you know, show examples. And to me, you know, like what is symptomatic of a program that hasn't had results, right? And so I think naturally, particularly with kind of the recent history here, there's a lot of just ego protection that goes on. There's a lot of the guards go up pretty quick, right? It's a little bit of a traumatized group, right? And so it's trying to get them to understand that you're not victimized by the result. The result doesn't happen to you, right? You have to control what you can, grab control of what you can, of which we have more control than we're exercising right now, and deliver the result that you want. And that will be the biggest shift in this program. And the sooner we get a grip on that, you know, the sooner we'll start to see games like last Saturday shift in our favor. And it's not because the fates have it for us, right? It's because, you know, in the moment where we have a goal line stand, we turn a goal line stand against a Stanford team that's a really physical front and a really good offensive line. I mean, that was an impressive, four down sequence for us. And we turn around and against a big physical front, we go 98 yards and puncture with a game tying touchdown. There's 4 minutes left in the first half. And in my mind at that moment, I'm like, here we go. You know, we just got everything synced up where it needs to be. And now we're going to have a chance to take a lead at half with possession coming in the second half. You know, we give up the return. We're all sides on the kickoff. And those things to me are just indicative of a team that's still learning how to win. And so when I talk about, really, really dialing into what we do control and understanding that we have more, we don't control the outcome, but we have more control through our process than we're exercising right now. It's just that level of it's that killer instinct in the moment to say, like, we have a chance to put this team away. And so when we take the field on the kickoff, it's with every intention to pin the ball inside the 20 and, you know, to come up off a big tackle, celebrating in the end zone and just build the momentum in our favor. We had it. We had the goal line stand. We had the 98 drive. Now it's time to puncture it. And, you know, we weren't able to do that.
So what is the process, Clark, for – you said it's the biggest shift in the program. What is the process for making that shift happen? And also the term ego protection, can you explain that?
Yeah, like I guess it's just human instinct, right? When you know, like guys put so much time and energy into this, right? And so inevitably the first thing that, you know, that happens when – you feel like the result is slipping, or you feel you just start to get defensive. It's just a way to protect yourself from what the exposure that, you know, a competitive athlete feels in the arena. This is Teddy Roosevelt's the man in the arena, right? That's the idea, is that, like, you know, can I go out on Saturday and completely expose myself to the competitive experience understanding that I don't control ultimately whether we win or lose, but I control the fight. And if I can at each moment fight for every blade of grass on that field, then, you know, yeah, a win is going to feel exhilarating. A loss is going to be as painful as anything because I care about it. But that's the process through which we learn and grow. That's the process through which we become a team. And what happens when we go into ego protection is we don't fully invest. You know, we pull back a little bit. And this was, you know, this kind of first came up in East Tennessee State in the moment where it felt like the adversity struck with the scoreboard. We got behind. And I'd never really seen it on our team because it was the first experience I had with our team, you know, on game day at Colorado State. You know, we did a much better job fighting through it. But like I said, we kind of all hit a stride at the same time. So there was this fighting spirit, but the momentum built, you know, all at once, and it gave us a chance to, you know, to see the lead and to build on the lead. You know, Saturday night was a little more of a back and forth affair, and so what we can't do is spend time dwelling on, you know, the negative play of the past. And here's another example, right? We give a 13-point swing at the end of the first half. So it's the kickoff return, penalty, plus a long return, gets the ball at midfield. Our defense holds for a field goal. There's three. We come back out on offense with the full intention of driving down and scoring a touchdown. Well, second and eight, we drop a slant. Third and eight, we throw an interception. That results in a touchdown for Stanford. There's 10. We come back out. We're really trying to bleed the clock. Stanford wants us to punt it, which is smart on their end. We punt it. We don't cover it. We get another penalty, and they finish the half with a field goal. That's 13. So with all that happened negatively, you go into the locker room, you're still getting possession coming back in the second half. And so to me, you know, we have to make a decision whether that's the turning point in the game, that last, you know, 4 minutes of the second half is the turning point in the game, or is it just a blip? You know, are we going to be able to counterpunch and come back and, you know, drive for a touchdown in that first drive? And now all of a sudden it's a 6-point game. And, you know, we stabilized on defense. So there were possessions in the second half where we had opportunities to score. You know, the first play in the second half is a counter play. It's the one that Ray Davis hit the spin move on down the field that broke for, like, I don't know, it was like, you know, 30 yards or so. Well, in that first play, we have the defense completely separated, meaning the ball is going to run vertically through the middle of the field, and it's going to be on secondary. And if Rocco can outrun the angles, it's a touchdown. If he can't, it's probably a 50 or 60-yard run. That's the first play. And we missed the kickout block. And so we get a TFL. So rather than have an explosive run, it's a missed block, you know, not a challenging scheme. Just we have to win our one-on-ones. And again, grab control of the moment, because if we're able to do that, what happened at the end of the first half is a great teaching moment, but it's just a blip. Because we weren't able to do that, the end of the first half became a turning point in the game, and that's what, you know, that's becomes the lesson of the game. Hey, you know, you got to win the middle eight. And so those are kind of the more nuanced things that we're talking about. And as far as how do you like teach this, or how do you learn it? I mean, experience. You know, experience is the mother of all learning, right? It's like, you know, and for me to describe what they're going through in the moment, you know, to understand this is what it should feel like, and this is what it looks like. You know, there was a moment in the game where I pulled the defense together on the sideline, and that's me trying to interject in the moment to say, this isn't our defense. You know, we have to make a change here. We have to make a shift in attitude. And so you can do some of that in the moment. Obviously, some of that's in reflection. Now some of it's in the build-up to a new game. And you just continue to try to teach around the attitude of winning and the habits of winning and what winning looks like in a team game where all three phases do their part to put away a good opponent. And, you know, it takes time, but the sooner our guys can kind of grip that and have fun with it too, because that's the fun is in those moments where we do come together. I mean, our guys had so much fun against Colorado State because, again, they fought together. They made it through adversity together. They all hit a stride at the same time, and they found out what they were capable of doing. And so, again, we're looking to replicate that and, you know, we're looking to replicate it against really good opponents. And so, you know, we have more control than we're exercising right now. We've got to learn from this, and we got to find that control, and we got to grab it and steer the game in the direction that we want it to go.
That's really, really interesting stuff. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head coach, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexo. Clark, really appreciate you taking time to join us this morning, and looking forward to talking to you again next week.
Hey, I appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you soon. You guys take care.
Absolutely. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head coach, our guest here on Robbie and Rexo. Lots of interesting stuff there from Clark Lee. We'll get to more of that coming up next. Get your reaction as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Play silly underdog picks today. Pick three football underdog teams you think will win this week for a chance to win a pair of tickets to a sporting event or a concert in Nashville. Go to thegamenashville.com to play now. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Presented by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Thanks to Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee for joining us in the last segment. And I tell you what, that was a very interesting response. And I heard the original comments that Clark Lee made on yesterday with Darren and Willie on Darren Donick and Chase, just talking about the makeup of his team and how they've got to shift from trying not to worry about controlling every aspect of the outcome, but controlling the opportunities to seize momentum that he felt like totally went by the wayside against Stanford. I feel a lot smarter after having that conversation with Clark Lee.
Professor Lee.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
That was a very long answer.
It was.
A very long
answer. Very good answer.
But a very interesting answer. It's and they're, I mean, they are very invested in that too, beyond Clark Lee talking about it. Like they,
yeah.
You know, think about, like, I don't know if, is it mental coach? Is that the right term? You know, our Pete Sampson did the behind the scenes with Vanderbilt, and of course, very surprising first week. Didn't think Pete did not think he would be, you know, listening to Clark Lee talk about a loss to ETSU after the game. But that was one of the big takeaways I had from that story, was the I'm going to find it so I can say it correctly. But basically, mental coach on staff who, you know, the idea basically use your mind as a weapon,
yep.
You know, which kind of sounds sinister, like a, sounds like a,
sounds awesome,
like a spy movie or something. But I mean, look, it's like there's so many different frontiers, I think, in athletics. Again, health, like eating, nutrition, that never used to matter. It's like, you're a great athlete, you eat whatever.
Yeah.
Now it's a little bit extra edge to do that. And a lot of the cognitive stuff has really become a big part of even evaluating athletes too. A couple Vanderbilt professors, I wrote about them last year, who have this company who you could kind of, with some athletes, you can, like baseball players, for example, there's certain cognitive functions that you can project if someone's going to be like a good hitter because of certain ways that they process information. I mean, all this stuff. And I feel like, I'm sure Vanderbilt's not the only team doing things like this, but it feels like maybe they're a little bit advanced compared to some. I mean, Clark Lee is a football coach in the SEC. Jeremy Pruitt also was a football coach in the SEC. I just keep coming back to that. Like, it's a wide range of approaches and personalities can have that job.
They really need a reality TV show of SEC coaches. I know that we pointed out the tweet last week of the guy that just put the picture of all the SEC coaches up and guess what they would do if they weren't football coaches, which was pretty awesome. Like, I think Dan Mullen was like a real estate agent or something. I mean, it's pretty spot on,
yeah,
when it comes,
yeah,
to that. But it is interesting just the dynamic of that group's made up. Now, look, we know that Vanderbilt is not going to approach it this way and cannot approach it this way. But look, let's be honest here. We have a pretty good idea what's about to happen on Saturday with Georgia coming in here. Georgia very well could be the best team in the country right now. I don't know. I mean, they look awfully good, awfully impressive. So if you're Clark Lee and you listen to everything we just heard him say about trying to make that transition as a program, what are you hoping to get done this week against Georgia. What would you consider, Joe Rexroad, to be a successful outing for Vanderbilt against Georgia this Saturday?
This is the only downside to that really good answer we just got from Clark Lee. We did not have time to give him the opportunity to guarantee victory against the Bulldogs.
We did not.
Or at least talk a little bit of trash, you know. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. What is success? I mean, I guess you put a number on it. Is there a certain number where if you lose by less than 30, is that good? I mean, honestly, if Georgia comes in here and wins like 38-10 or, you know, 31-3, like to me, that would be actually kind of impressive.
I mean, the line's 34.5.
So there you go. I mean, I guess go with Vegas. Like if you cover, we just make it as simple as like if you cover Saturday, good job.
Maybe.
I mean, look, on a more specific basis, you want to see kind of what he's talking about. I mean, really, it sounds to me one of the things, yeah, other coaches maybe simplify that, and it's not the whole thing, but like do your job, right? Keep doing your job, keep fighting.
Yeah.
You know, you want to see them hang in and try to get a stop on defense. And, I mean, it's just the hard part here is Georgia's defense.
It's just suffocating.
Yeah. I mean, you just basically have to three-step drop and try to your receiver there. But they're going to be – they will be manned up on your receivers.
Right. I know.
They will be pressing your receivers, and those receivers are good, and you got to win some battles there and get the ball out fast.
I know Clemson's offense has not been very good this year.
And
they were awful again on Saturday against Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech almost did the same thing Georgia did.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it was 14-8 was the final score on Saturday because I was watching that in an establishment thinking to myself, huh, DJ Uiagalelei not going so well so far in Clemson. Yeah. So I think some people look at Clemson's offense and what they've done, or I guess more specifically what they haven't done since then, and said, all right, well, Georgia's defense isn't that good. It's Clemson's offense. Georgia's defense is pretty good, man. They are probably the best defense in the SEC. They might be the best defense in the country. So it could be tough sledding to move the ball against this group on Saturday.
Well, look, it's going to be tough on the field. I don't think it's going to be fun around the field for Vanderbilt. It's going to be
– probably not.
I would just expect a Georgia home game. I would expect a massive show of Georgia fans – kind of like 2 years ago. I mean, maybe it's good that it's an early game, but it's not going to be fun, probably.
Is sports psychologist the term you were searching for? It's coming from John in Nashville on the text line.
No, it's not. It's actually – so Kayleen Curry is the football program's director of mental performance. Now, he saw –
I like that better.
And this is something that Brian Kelly had someone like this at Notre Dame. So, yep. I mean, it's – again, it's not like they're the only program that was in it, and that obviously Clark Lee was at Notre Dame. But it's just an interesting idea. And one quote from Curry in this piece is, you know, she's not trying, like, she has no couch. You know, her like, it's this is not like, come here and tell me, you know, what's bothering you or whatever. Like, we're trying to coach your mind. And a quote from her is, quote, I had a couple players come in later in the week. They were like, how do I use my mind as a weapon? And then she's like, nice, that landed. That's what she's trying to get across. Because, look, I think what Clark Lee was talking about was, one, when you lose as much as they have, then naturally aren't you going to kind of – aren't the shoulders going to slump a little faster?
Of course.
When that's the case. And here we go again. I mean, that's all human nature. So you're – I guess in a way you're – I mean, you're trying to become tougher, right? To put it in ball coach terms, do your job and be tougher. But there is more to it, and it's just going to be really interesting to see how this develops with the program. And it's also going to be interesting to me to see how they respond to Saturday. I don't see much good happening Saturday on the field or around the field for Vanderbilt. I'll be very impressed.
Andrew from Dover on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. If Vandy scores at all against Georgia, then consider it a success.
Yeah, I mean, now granted, if it's Kirby has emptied the bench and it's the very last drive of the game or something, yeah. And, you know, that's a little less, that's a little different, right. But I agree.
Yeah,
I mean, anyone who scores touchdowns on Georgia this year in college football, you've done something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The Nashville Predators are back in action starting today. Training camp is opening for the Nashville Predators today. What are the top storylines for the Preds as they head into training camp? We'll get to some of those coming up next. Take your thoughts as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Yeah, buddy, the vibe returns today. The NHL is back. The Nashville Predators back in action for training camp today. Been a long time since we've had the vibe here on the show.
Haven't heard that one in a while. I'm having flashbacks to Porth, like, dancing to it, you know, in rhythm. You know,
that just got me hyped.
You
got
to do that, Michelle. Yeah. You got to do the whatever Porth was doing, like. Like
really
Frankenstein, kind
of on the stream. Nicely done.
That will be a video on Twitter later of Joe doing that.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. If Porth did it, but then because the camera's on me, I'm the one who gets
do we think
suckered into another one.
Do we think vibing's going to be a thing this year? We're going back to it? Or is that we're leaving that in the past?
I don't know. It's like the Detroit Red Wings every playoff. They would come up with like a little slogan for the playoff run, like when they're really good, like, turn on the red light. It was always just some red something stupid, you know. Red, I don't even, God, I need to go look them up. I can't even, I remember turn on your red light was one of them. It's like, what the hell does that mean? Like, go win some hockey games. But I don't know. I feel like we're vibing was sort of like the story of the 1920 Predators. The 2021 Predators, yes. Sorry. So I don't know. I mean, I think for now, until something else replaces it, I guess they're still vibing.
I mean, I guess I'd come up with some different questions, see if we can get something else rolling here.
I mean, if they, you know, it's sort of like if they go into a losing streak, they struggle for a stretch, then, you know, there's going to be like, oh, how's the vibing?
Yeah.
You vibing now, huh?
What's that vibing look like?
We need more t-shirts because I need to get one.
I will talk to the powers that be about that.
I've got a great one.
Yeah. Who doesn't want my face on their person at all time?
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Preds training camp opening today. Basically, team meetings today, some physicals. I think their first real on-ice session going to be on Friday. So then hockey starts. They've got preseason doubleheader coming up on Sunday, which is amazing to me.
Wow.
Look, they've been skating for probably over a month at this point, so it's not really that big a deal. But it is amazing how, I mean, they're going to be on the ice Friday at Centennial, and Sunday they'll be in Florida playing two games.
Two games?
Just get in there, baby.
Great day to play two. Yeah. That's it's hockey. It always comes so, and I'm like, wait a minute, football, didn't it just start?
It did.
But here we go.
So obviously there's a lot of storylines heading into camp, and I was on Darren Donica Chase yesterday discussing some of them, and you know, it's interesting, you know, where's Duchesne gonna play? Where's Philip Tomasino gonna play? How much of a look are they gonna give him in the preseason? I would imagine a lot. I mean, there's a lot of lineup decisions that they're going to have to make, and we'll have time to kind of break down all the lineup decisions for John Hines as we move forward here. Joe Rexford, if I asked you your number one storyline for the Predators that you're most intrigued by this season, what would it be as they head into the season?
Yeah, I'd like to be more creative, but the young players. It's Tomasino for sure, and I think there's probably some unrealistic expectations for what he's going to be like this year,
yep.
But you still want to see the player that, by all accounts, really has a chance to be a very good top six forward in this league. And I mean, look, Elie Tolvanen also, and there are others, but I mean, Elie Tolvanen, what is he? At least now, I mean, a year ago, we were seriously talking like, boy, Tolvanen, I don't know, can he even make the team? And as we pointed out, you know, 21 years old, but still, it was feeling like, gosh, this just isn't working out. It's a lot better now, but I still wonder, like, can he continue to take steps? And then also, when he had that really nice stretch last year, is that who he is? If so, that's really good for the Preds. And it'll be interesting to see where he fits in, who he's playing with, and, you know, again, whether he can take another step. So, I mean, I'd probably start with those two guys.
I think that's where a lot of people are going to start. That's certainly near the top of my list. I said this a couple weeks ago on Preds Insiders with Porth, and I said it again yesterday. You know, to me, the number one job for John Hines this year, and a lot of people are going to go with the young guys, and I understand why. But the number one job for John Hines this year, you got to find a way to maximize whatever you have left in Johansson and Duchesne, because the conversation on those two has changed. Look, you and I never really bought that it was a realistic possibility that one of those two were going to get snatched up in the expansion draft, and it wasn't, and they didn't, and they're here. But now they're here. They're going to be here, and they're going to be on your team for the foreseeable future. Their contracts and what they're being paid dictate that you're stuck with them, I mean, and you're going to have to find a way to make it work. So, look, it's encouraging if you're the young players and they all come in and take a step. I think you can feel good about that if you're the Predators. But if you don't get those two figured out, I'm not sure how much of it's really going to matter. So, to me, look, I think it's fair to say there is at least some level of disagreement, or I don't know that bitterness is the right word, but it's not all peachy between John Hines and Matt Duchesne. I think it's fair to say that. And, you know, we've heard some interesting responses by Matt Duchesne over the course of the last calendar year. I'm interested to see how they use him and just what he looks like coming into this camp, because you're stuck with Duchesne. You're stuck with Ryan Johansson. And you got to find a way to maximize whatever it is that those two have left. And look, maybe it's just not a lot. I don't know. But I know this. 35 points between the two of them last year is not good. And I know that points aren't everything, but they are something. And you've got to find a way to get those two back to closer to what we've seen throughout the history of their career, which is why I think it might be a good idea to start them off playing together. I'm interested to see how that works.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good storyline. I want to take that. I'd switch my answer to that one. Another one that I think is very interesting, of course, and this goes to who's playing with who, too, but, you know, Philip Forsberg, it's going to be a thing. It's going to be a storyline. I don't think it's going to happen anytime real soon here, and I don't know if it's going to happen. And I definitely think the scenario is in play where he's not sure. It drags into the season. The season doesn't go well.
Yep.
And David Poile would have to make a decision, like, is it the smart thing to do here to really rebuild? Because that's what it – I mean, I don't know what else it would be if ultimately, okay, you're going to lose this guy. Well, you've got to trade him at the deadline.
Yep.
For assets. And then it's like the competitive rebuild kind of changes definitions, doesn't it?
I would think so. I mean, he's your first-line guy, right? I mean, if you are in a situation where you've got to end up trading him – and by the way, on that front – as of last Friday, from what I was told, conversations have not even started yet on a contract extension. So, you know, that could have changed in the last few days.
Is that surprising to you?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Now, maybe it's as simple as, you know, the conversation, and Willie and Darren were talking about this yesterday too. It doesn't always have to take a very long time from the conversation's beginning to the conversation's ending in these negotiations. Sometimes it does. But that's not always the case. So, I mean, Philip Forsberg could come in on Friday, his agent, and the Predators start beginning negotiations, and there's a contract agreement by Sunday. I mean, these things can happen. But at this point, I would be pretty shocked if he signed to an extension before the season starts.
Yeah. So then it becomes, okay, so we've got more access this year. There's actually some in-person discussions. So Philip Forsberg gets asked about that fairly regularly. And it's just a thing. Is that a distraction? Is it a problem for him? The bottom line is he could be potentially on the open market next summer.
Yep.
Contract years. A lot of times you see athletes have awfully good years in contract years. What does that mean? And then I can see the scenario. I can see someone looking at this and saying, you know, it might be better for them. Just, you need to rebuild. There you go. But gosh, he's your best forward.
It'd like, be nice to have him.
Yeah. It's much better to have him than to not. So Those are three good ones right there.
There's a lot more to get to. We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line on the Predators all show long, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We will get back into the Nashville Predators a little bit later in the show. When we come back, it's time for The Choice Is Yours. We'll take your thoughts on the text line on that as well. Robbie Stanley, myself, back in the questions chair this week. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the week, time for The Choice Is Yours, where we throw out different scenarios both in sports and in life. We encourage your participation on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Also streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. I am back in the questions chair this week. Joe Rexroad, Michelle Knezovic, would you like sports or non-sports?
My choice.
Your choice.
Let's do non-sports first.
Let's begin with non-sports. All right. This one is very open-ended, so take it any way you want to take it. Today, officially the first day of fall, or autumn, as people call it in some parts of the country. This is not one of those parts. We call it fall here.
Where do you call it autumn?
I don't know.
Okay.
On Instagram. That's the only place people call it autumn.
Your favorite part of fall is what? Or maybe even your most underrated part of fall. Take it any way you want to take it. The choice is yours.
Okay, I'll start because to me, underrated, actually it's a little bit of what you were talking about. I hate cold weather.
Correct.
I would, and I've said this and I mean it, so I'm kind of contradicting myself here. I'd live in like 88 and humid every day, I'd be good, okay? But I'd say the underrated part is I do kind of like the football weather. 50s at night,
the slight put on the air.
Yeah, on a sweatshirt, put on jeans, you know, maybe a little cider, a little coffee, you know, 17 of those a day, a little hot chocolate, whatever. Like I like that. You just want it to end.
Right.
That's the problem, is you know what's coming next, and I know it's not bad here. You're right, Michelle. It's nothing like we've lived through in the past. But still, it gets bad enough where it's like, okay, I don't like this. But the fall, a little bit of bite, yeah. Yeah, I love it. The leaves. I mean, football, you know, it is pretty
awesome. There's a lot great about it.
It's pretty great.
It's pretty great. Michelle, your favorite part of fall, your most underrated part of fall?
Fall is my absolute favorite season ever. And as soon as you said that, I was like, the options, the amount of options I have, right? Okay.
Just rattle them off.
You have to pick one.
Pumpkin girl. Anything pumpkin, everything pumpkin.
Yeah.
You got the munchkins from Dunkin' Donuts. You get the pumpkin coffee. Love it all. The weather, Joe, I get that. And I think something very underrated brings me back to my high school days. Love NFL, love college football. But in the fall, in your hometown, high school football, 7 o'clock game, nice weather, you know, a little brisk out. I love it. I love going home to a high school football game and just experiencing the fall. It makes me think of that Boys of Fall song by Kenny Chesney.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Love that song.
I'll take your word for it.
Something Joe doesn't know.
He's a big Kenny Chesney guy.
So, yeah. I mean, I love really everything about fall. The weather. If it could be fall 24/7, that would be my ideal life.
I still rank summer at number one. But, I mean, there's many sports things about fall that we like, obviously. I mean, football, hockey, NBA, World Series. I mean, it's maybe the greatest time of the year in terms of the sporting calendar.
Yeah, October has a case as the best sports month.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot that's great on that front. As Dennis points out on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, which I agree with, an underrated part is mowing the yard, starting to wind down a little bit.
Mm.
So that's something that I really enjoy about fall, is not having to cut the grass all that much anymore. Big bonfire guy, gigantic bonfire guy, and there are times like where I'll start too many fires in the fall. Like my wife looks at me like, "Are you starting another fire? This is like 8 days in a row that you've just lit things on fire in our front yard." Yeah, so like a little bit of a pyromaniac. So yeah,
okay,
that's my most underrated
s'mores guy.
Oh, big s'mores guy, probably too much of a s'mores guy.
Hey, if you
which
get
is why I'm going to the gym after the show
many,
today.
Oh, if you're
going to
start that many fires, you better have some s'mores, man.
Right. Good stuff.
Nice.
Congratulations on the
we
first day
love
of fall. That's right.
Love fall.
All right, sports. We've talked a lot about Derrick Henry this week. So I'm just going to pick four running backs here. And you can take any one of these running backs in their primes for one game. Derrick Henry, Emmitt Smith, Adrian Peterson, Terrell Davis. You can pick one of those four running backs in their prime for one game. Which one are you taking? Derrick Henry, Emmitt Smith, Adrian Peterson, Terrell Davis.
So, to me, there's two that stand way beyond the other two, in my opinion.
Okay.
And I know a lot of people, especially Cowboys fans.
You're about to get
But it would be Derrick Henry and Adrian Peterson. I think they're clearly better. And I understand Emmitt Smith ran for 10 million yards. He was a great player. I don't think Emmitt Smith is as good as his stats and his career achievement. He was great.
He was great.
But that might be the best offensive line we've ever seen. Again, you're gonna hammer someone because they have other good teammates around them. It's a team sport. I'm just saying, Henry and Peterson, one game in their prime.
I can see the struggle on your face.
It's tough because Adrian Peterson in his prime was absolutely ridiculous. I'll go Peterson.
That was difficult for you.
Well, it's very – I mean, Derrick Henry is that good.
I know.
Terrell Davis, great player, but, I mean, that was also, again, that was very much early days of this offense. I mean, it's a version of this offense, and so there was some schematics involved there. But, yeah, I'll go AP. It's close.
Michelle, Derrick Henry, Emmitt Smith, Adrian Peterson, Terrell Davis. You get them for one game. Which back are you choosing?
So I was leaning towards the same two as Joe, but I'm actually going to go Derrick Henry. I feel like he's just so unique, and we witnessed this also on Sunday. A lot can go wrong, pretty much everything in the first half, I guess you could say, for the Titans. You know, between losing players and just not having a good game offensive line, and Derrick Henry just makes it happen. And I think he's a unique running back, and he just does different things than other people. So, creative plays, all that jazz. I'm going to go Derrick Henry, the king. And he was just voted AFC Offensive Player of the Week, which we tweeted.
Probably deserves that.
Yeah.
No,
yes.
Probably.
I would say so.
This one's tough. I'm probably right now going to go with Adrian Peterson. But if Derrick Henry, I mean, you could ask me again on Monday. And I mean, Derrick Henry's a good answer. Henry's a really good answer.
It's not a bad answer. Yeah.
So that one was really tough. I'll give the, I mean, eyelash nod to Adrian Peterson, but it's close.
So really, this was a lot of shade for Emmitt Smith. I love it.
Yeah, Emmitt Smith was not really.
I mean, he's a great player.
He's a great player. I'm just saying, in my decision making, he was not in the top three. So take that. There was only four options. So take that for what it's worth.
I mean, I even had him third. He was.
All right, back to non-sports. You can go back and invent something before anyone else did. What would you invent? So you can go back and you can invent the car or the airplane, the smartphone, whatever you want. And you get the credit for it. You get the payday for it. What are you going back and inventing? Who would like to begin?
Joe nods to me to go first. I'm still thinking, Joe.
Mine's a stupid answer, but
well, Robbie, you go first then. I need another second.
So sometimes the questioner has to go first because it's the open-ended ones.
Mine's dumb, but I would absolutely do it. I would go back and invent a Nintendo gaming system, all of it. It's really dumb, but it's brought the world a great amount of joy. The Nintendo 64, I still maintain the greatest gaming device of all time. I still have mine from 1995. Still works. I would invent the Nintendo 64.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. You could take the easy way out and say, yeah, I'd go with an airplane. Well, great. Awesome.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do that because that would involve like trial and error, wouldn't it? Like,
yes, it would.
I don't like – I look at those Wright brothers' footage. I'm like, ew, that looks awful.
Why don't we just try this airplane right now?
Yeah. I was going to say like invent Twitter and then destroy it.
You know, that is the most retro answer ever.
That might be.
It's not a bad one.
But I don't know. Maybe the TV. TVs are cool.
Yeah. Got to vote for the clock on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That's a good one.
The clock, okay. The watch. Yeah. I guess you got a lot of options with that one.
How about the wheel? Like, you know, we always talk about reinventing the wheel. How about
what
inventing
about actually
the wheel?
Inventing the wheel?
That would be pretty dope.
It would be.
Okay, so mine is very broad.
Okay.
I would invent the concept of Disney World.
Okay.
How about that? Mm.
So move aside, Walt Disney. Here comes Michelle Knezevic.
Wow. Michelle Disney. And then you just have so many options, so many cool things. You have Disney, and then they basically own just
everything.
Would you change anything?
I mean, I think I would add a little Michelle Knezevic flair to it. I can't say I've ever really thought of it. Of what I would add or change.
Does Knezevic World have the same ring to it?
Oh, I muted.
I like
muted.
It.
Yes, it does. Knezevic World.
There you go.
Ah, mute issue, huh?
Yeah. Joe's rubbing off on me.
Oh, man. There's a lot of good ones on the text line. Got to vote for NASCAR because I would never let their point system get this way. Invent Google. I knew Google would be on there at some point. A lot of good ones. All right. Very quickly. We've got about 35 seconds. You can pick one program nationally in college football that's been down lately to revive for the good of the sport. Which program do you pick? So a program that's been down for a while that you can revive for the good of the sport. I know Will's answer. He doesn't count.
Yeah, the Huskers. Huskers at Sparty. Well, we'll talk about that as the week progresses. I'll be the homer. I'll say Tennessee. I mean, why can't the SEC? The SEC East needs to be more interesting. Georgia, Florida is great. I think it would be great for the sport and the SEC to have Tennessee actually be a player and have three teams, because those are really the only three, and I'm sorry, Caturday, but that have the ceiling to be that level.
Yeah.
Throwing shade.
I know. Hey, I like Kentucky. I like Caturday.
I was going to say, I mean, obviously they've been pretty good this year, but UCLA just as a whole, I think those are who I choose. Robbie, your turn.
Yeah, UCLA is good.
Yeah. I'll go Texas. It's fun when Texas is good.
Isn't it fun when Texas is bad? They suck,
it is fun when they suck. But I think Texas, you talk about generating more interest nationally, Texas would be. I mean, selfishly, my vote would be Tennessee. But objectively, Texas is who I would choose.
Well, they're coming. I mean, I'm sure things will get way better for them when they start playing an SEC schedule.
I'm sure it will.
They just lost to Arkansas.
That's right. Yes, they did. That does it for today's version of The Choice is Yours. Good stuff, Rex Rode and Knezevic.
Nice job.
Very nicely done. When we come back, we'll be joined by Bob Kravitz from The Athletic, covers the Indianapolis Colts. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Rode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.